Caleb Parsons is 6'9", swimming at
2-3. Urban Meyer?
Liar.
Don't believe a word you said.
Look at you go. Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike.
And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, October 5th, 2009. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today, we got Mike DeFerdinando.
Hey guys, what's up?
And Kyle Maestri.
What's up, world?
I could lie to you guys right now and say we have a lot to talk about on today's show, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be honest, right before the show started, we just threw some topics together. You know, we're going to go with our usual free-flowing conversation, see what happens. So 40 to 60 minutes of relentless effort, we'll see. But we're going to start off talking about Tim Tebow, the recent update at the Monday morning press conference of Urban Meyer. Tim Tebow was not there to do his usual Monday morning spiel. He will not be practicing today, and he has not yet been cleared to play. Kyle and I already weighed in on Friday's show about whether or not we thought he would play against LSU this weekend. Deefer, what do you think?
I think that he probably will play, but I think they'll definitely hold this decision out as long as they can. I think they'll give LSU something to think about. They'll be really careful with Tim. So I think we'll know maybe like Thursday if he's going to play, maybe not even till game time. But I would expect him to play.
I actually buy the fact that they don't know yet, though, too. Like, I don't think that they know and they're just withholding it. I think they really don't know, and they're leaving it up to the last-minute evaluation. Just because he hasn't been yet cleared to play doesn't mean he's been ruled out to play either. So I think basically there's no new news today. But if you're keeping score at home, Ed Ashoff from the Gainesville Sun guaranteed that we'd get Tebow today. We didn't. Ed, you lose. And Ben was right because he said that we would not.
Yeah, I think Ed's his reasoning and the reason, you know, that you talked about that there's no news yet is because he had to have 7 days of, you know, no symptoms or whatever. And obviously he just hasn't had the time to, you know, to show that length of time with no symptoms. So obviously, there's nothing to talk about right now with that. We're going to move on from that. We'll revisit this at the end of the week podcast. But we're going to talk some more national college football news. We'll start with the SEC, a little more local. We were talking before the show about the East and the West and how just dominant the West has been all season. Kyle, do you want to start us off on that?
It's pretty surprising. I think when you think of the SEC, at least I generally think of like the East teams being much better. And Florida's still the best team in the country, in my opinion. So obviously the best. I think they're the best team in the conference. But after Florida, I feel like it's possible there are 5 teams in the West that are better than the second best team in the East. Everyone but Mississippi State. But with the way Auburn's been playing, I think everyone expected Auburn to be a little bit down this year, but they've really shown that offense is working well for them. Excuse me. And that they're not down at all. Like they look really good right now. I don't think they're going to be like a contending for the, you know, conference championship game, but I do expect them to go 8-4 or something like that. They look pretty good right now. They're 5-0. So
Yeah, Auburn's been a really big surprise. I think we all expected not very much from this year. Right. I mean, Chris Todd's playing quarterback, but Chris Todd's putting up great numbers, and that Auburn offense is looking great. Gus Malzahn's in there, you know, so they've looked great, actually, surprisingly so.
I think we all expected Auburn to be mediocre, just not even worth talking about.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I think we expected, you know, this from the rest of the West. I think Arkansas was obviously even a favorite of ours coming into the season. But I don't know if I expected the East to be quite this bad.
Yeah, I don't think anyone did. Also, Mississippi State deserves some credit, Dan Mullen, because, I mean, they've got some losses, but they're at least giving teams fight. They played Georgia Tech this week, and they hung in there and didn't get blown out. So that's a credit to them. I think he's starting to get things moving in the right direction, certainly from an offensive standpoint. But, yeah, the East is just a disaster. I mean, you have no quarterback play in the East at all. I think that's the main problem. I don't know if you all agree, but there's just zero quarterback play in the East.
I mean, Joe Cox of Georgia is just horrible. He was trying to give that game away against LSU this weekend. Just
and where,
trying.
Where would you rank him, though, among East quarterbacks?
Second? Yeah. Still better than Jonathan Crompton?
Right, yeah. And like or, whoever, yeah. And Mark, Hartline. Mike Hartline? Like,
yeah. I think I mean, Stephen Garcia is maybe the second best quarterback in the East.
God, that's a scary thought.
That's a
he probably
statement.
Is, though. You're right. I'd take Stephen Garcia over Joe Cox. Mm. If A.J. Green doesn't bail Joe Cox out at the end, that was a great catch, yeah. A.J. Green.
Yeah, A.J. Green's a great player. But Georgia, I expected at the beginning of the season Tennessee to be better than they would. I bought into the Lane Kiffin hype train.
Tennessee's as bad as I thought, let me say. Actually, they're not as bad as I thought. They're better than I thought because I didn't realize their defense was as good as it is, and I expected them to keep losing, but they're actually losing closer than I thought they would. So I don't know. I guess I won't take credit for that.
There's something kind of encouraging about Tennessee, though, because it's like they have so much hope and they have so much promise, and like they could be so good if they had like – you could always make the excuse, well, if Jonathan Crompton wasn't their quarterback, like, you know, they have a lot of talent at key positions, but – as long as Crompton's there, and they just can't win close games.
And how long do we think Joe Cox is going to remain the quarterback at Georgia? I mean, they have Aaron Murray, the freshman from Tampa, who's supposed to be good.
I think they're trying to redshirt Murray, right? Yeah. Because even when Cox was out with injury, it was some other dude. I don't remember who the third quarterback was.
Logan Gray.
Logan Gray was the guy who was taking the snaps in practice and was going to supposedly play. So they have to be redshirting Murray because there's no way Murray's getting beat out by Logan Gray or whoever.
But if they start to lose, does that factor in at all?
No, in fact, that factors in the other way.
They're just going to ride it out.
It factors in the other way. If they were winning the whole time and they lost like a game or two and they were winning despite Cox, you'd think they'd throw him in there to salvage the season, like keep them winning. But if they're already got a bunch of losses, why would you burn the redshirt?
Can you really do that at a school like Georgia, though? Just write a season off and be like, all right, you know, we're sitting this one out, guys. We'll be back next year.
I mean, they're not going to totally write it off, but in the regard that you don't take a red shirt off a guy who's going to help you get to, you know, 8-4 instead of 7-5 or whatever, yeah, I think you kind of swallow that one, say, our bad. We probably should have been starting him from the beginning of the year. Yeah. We accidentally thought Joe Cox was good. Mm. So, I don't know. There's not many options for them, I feel like, at this point.
I mean, did they ever think Joe Cox was good, though, or is it...
Didn't he have, like, 5 touchdowns against him? Was it Arkansas in that shootout of a duel between him and Ryan Mallett? Yeah.
I don't know. All he ever wanted to be was a Georgia quarterback. Yeah. That's all he ever wanted to be his whole life.
He's living his dream out there on the field. I swear, if I heard that one more time in that telecast, I was going to go nuts.
It was so ridiculous.
That was, I mean, what else? Let's go talk about more at that LSU-Georgia game. We talked about that before. Georgia wanted to lose that game, from what I could tell.
Well,
they did. I mean, they did their best to, and they got it done.
They got the job done.
The missed tackle at the end just killed him on that Charles Scott run, because Charles Scott is a beast. By the way, I was losing all faith in Les Miles. I've never thought Les Miles was a good coach, but when you move a preseason first team all-SEC running back and probably the best running back in the conference to fullback, and you decide not to give him any touches for the first 4 weeks of your season, I mean, that takes a special kind of dumb, in my opinion. Like, that's amazing that this guy's a national championship and he made that decision. And then, you know, I give him some credit, at least against Georgia. He's like, oh, wait, we have Charles Scott. Let's put him at running back and let him run over some people. And he rushed for like 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. So I think he made Florida's job tougher next week, because I imagine they'll leave Charles Scott at running back.
To be fair to Les Miles, Charles Scott really didn't do much the first couple games of the season while he was at running back. I mean, he was sitting on my fantasy bench for the first 3 weeks of the season. He goes off against Georgia. He has that big run at the end for the win. He looked great. He was just like throwing people to the ground, breaking tackles.
I think he wasn't getting that many carries, though, was he?
The first couple weeks he was. Then they kind of moved him to fullback, and Keelan Williams took some of those carries away. But I think they're definitely better off with him at running back.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it was a bad case of coaching to move, like, to lose faith in one of your best guys. Right. Clearly proven one of your best guys that quickly, and just be like, well, all right, fullback.
Yeah, especially when you don't have much of a passing game to take the pressure off him. Like, it's not really his fault if guys are stacking the box against him. So,
yeah. So what do we think of Jordan Jefferson, the LSU quarterback, after watching him play against Georgia?
I have no opinion on him, to be honest. Like, I guess I haven't seen him play enough, but he doesn't impress me, but he doesn't look horrible to me either. I don't throw him in, like, the Crompton, Hartline, Cox, like, disaster that's happening in the East now.
He'd be the second best quarterback in the East without a doubt, but third in the West.
Like, maybe he could be good in the future. Like, he shows that he could be good, but he isn't really good right now. I don't know. They played the freshman Russell Shepherd a little bit too, which was kind of different. Gave him a different look. I kind of like the way he played, but I guess we'll have to see.
I think he's got to be the fourth best in the West, the way what's-his-face is playing. The Alabama quarterback?
McElroy.
Yeah. I think he's proven that he's an upgrade from John Parker Wilson, in my opinion. Everyone knew John Parker Wilson, but he was like the Trent Dilfer game manager. I feel like McElroy was actually making some plays for them this year.
And, yeah, you could make that argument because Alabama's been better than last year. Some people argue they're the best team in the country.
Yeah, I think their offense looks much better. Yeah. I don't know if you guys agree. Trent Richardson, the freshman running back, has been good for them.
Absolutely.
Ingram looks really, really good. They didn't lose anything by losing Coffee, it looks like, at running back. So I've been very impressed with Alabama's offense.
And McElroy can, like, throw the ball deep. And, like, he can do some stuff through the air that Wilson, like, really couldn't do. Wilson kind of managed the game, like you said.
Right. Yeah, Wilson couldn't do much more than, like, 14-yard, like, post routes.
But don't tell Mike McCall that. The stats are unbelievable.
Yeah, of course.
He's been very good, though. I think, you know, you got to put Ryan Mallett and Jevin Snead above him, too. So I'd say he's the fourth best quarterback on that side of the league.
Yeah, but, and would definitely be the second in the East. That is, you know, as strong a statement about the quarterback play that you talked about before in the SEC.
The East is just a mess. I don't know. It's embarrassing almost.
We predicted this a little bit on the podcast we did at the beginning of the year talking about the SEC, but I for one, definitely didn't expect the East to just be this much of a disaster. Like, you know, not top, you know, second best to bottom, because obviously at the top, everything's secure, and that's going to redeem the East this year.
Right. But, I mean, outside of Florida, the top really isn't that strong. It's Florida than everyone else.
There is no top.
There is no top. It's just Florida.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying
to say. That's what he was saying. Okay. He was just referring to Florida, I think.
As the top. The only thing at the top.
So, I think South Carolina's got a chance to be decent, by the way. I would definitely say I'm picking them to finish second on this side of the conference this year. So, out of that four hole that they seem to be mired in that Spurrier always talked about at media days.
So a Capital One Bowl appearance possibly in South Carolina's future?
I think so. If they're taking the second best team, then I think they're going with South Carolina because they look – I mean, their defense is real good, led by my boy, Eric Norwood. So
Heisman candidate.
Yeah,
right?
Kyle's Heisman candidate, Eric Norwood. But, I mean, they play good D. Steven Garcia is, like, sometimes okay. Like, he can make plays. He'll make some plays against you also. Yeah. But at least, like, you have an option to do something with your quarterback. It's not a Crompton situation. So, I don't know. And Spurrier is a good coach, I think. For my money, one of the top three coaches in the conference, which is, I guess, saying a lot. I don't think as highly as some of the SEC coaches I know other people do.
Yeah. All right. You
can get it. I mean, it'd be good to see South Carolina have like a pretty good, you know, end of the season, finally make it to a bowl game. There's been a very mixed reviews of Steve Spurrier since he's been in South Carolina. Came in with a lot of like fanfare and hype, and really hasn't got much done. It's pretty much been the same as South Carolina's always been, actually. So it'd be nice to see him do well.
We got to be impressed with what they've done so far, though, right?
I mean, oh, yeah.
4-1, and their only loss. Well, they could have won the game, and you know, maybe somebody bet on them a lot of money if Steven Garcia would have made a play at the end of that game. Who'd they lose to in that one?
You should know this.
Yeah, I should know this. Was it Georgia?
It was Georgia. Okay. It was Georgia. And then,
yeah, in like a shootout, right? It was like 38-35.
Georgia's only had shootouts, from what I can tell.
Except when they're not scoring. Yeah.
And they had the big win over Ole Miss, too, which was a good win for that program.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a huge win, I thought. So, and they really made Snead look horrible. Oh. Is Snead not as good as we thought?
I don't think so.
I've been trying to say this. I've been telling you Ole Miss. All summer I said Ole Miss is a fraud. They're an average team. They're a top 25 team, but they're not a title contender.
See, I think you're talking about two different things, though, because I do think Snead's not as good as everyone says he is, but I still think Ole Miss is good. They still have other good players around. Dexter McCluster's a baller.
McCluster's great, and Snead's pretty good. They have McCluster, but I don't know. They're not real
Shea
deep.
Shea Hodge.
They're not super deep, and that kind of wears – when they get worn down late in the games, if they're like – if Hodge and McCluster can't get the ball, like, they have no one else to go to, really.
I think it shows a lot that, you know, like we talked about before the year, Houston Nutt, like, is not a great coach when, you know, all the chips are stacked in his favor. He don't know what to do in that situation.
To be fair, they've only lost one game. It was on the road to a team that I feel like is not that bad. And they get the thing that's still good for them, that was good when we looked at the schedule before the year, they get their tough opponents at home. They get Alabama at home, they get LSU at home. So I think, you know, they'll still have a chance to win that side of the conference.
To me, it's just about how bad they looked in that loss, though.
Right.
They looked awful on all sides of the ball, all sides.
But,
of the
ball. I mean, they played Vandy this week, and they looked okay. They didn't kill Vandy the way maybe you want them to, but they won by double digits. They did an okay job. They covered the spread.
Yeah. One more thing about Spurrier, I was going to say, I felt like there was a little bit of pressure on him to sort of, you know, succeed and go above and beyond what they've been doing recently. So I think this is going to be a good thing for him, sort of reestablish faith in South Carolina and him and his ability to sort of, you know, turn the program around.
Absolutely. I think I got the impression he's kind of losing faith in himself. I don't know if you guys ever got that. Yeah. He's kind of like, maybe it's time to pack it in. Like, can't really get done what I wanted to get done here.
Yeah.
I think winning's super important. Like, if he's going to be mediocre, I don't think he wants to be involved with it at all. Right. So I think he was one or two, like, you know, 7 win seasons away from just packing it in. Right. And I think this does a lot to keep him around for a few more years.
Keep him off the golf course in the in the coaching office for a little while longer.
And we all win because of that. As long as Steve Spurrier is in college football, we all win.
I agree.
That's true. All right, let's move on to some national college football stuff. Let's talk about one game, probably a local interest, Oklahoma-Miami, also of national significance. Ja'Cory Harris, the man. Let's talk about that.
The man, the myth. I actually really like Ja'Cory Harris a lot, but he made a couple plays to really hurt his team at the beginning of that game. Miami was moving the ball really well early in the game, and Ja'Cory Harris made 2 pretty ill-advised, took some shots down the field. He's a gunslinger, I'll tell you that. Like, he's really not afraid to go downfield, which I like, but at the same time, he took some shots he shouldn't have, threw a couple interceptions that set them back. But Miami did a really good job of keeping Oklahoma's offense in check in the second half. And I actually think Landry Jones is pretty good after watching him play. Like, I don't think he's a scrub that's really, like, hurting their team. I mean, he's obviously not as good as Bradford. But I give the Miami defense credit for holding them to 20 points.
It's sort of like a Brantley situation almost. Like, you know Landry Jones isn't bad. He's just not good enough to start over a Heisman winner.
Right.
So. I mean, admittedly, I didn't see most of this game. I caught the last few minutes at a faux Irish bar at Universal Studios.
What?
But, obviously.
Obviously.
Where else would you watch that game?
But, I mean, big win for Miami. You thought maybe after last week's like crushing loss to Virginia Tech, they would really take a step back. But this was a huge win for that program. I think this proves that they are for real and it's not a fluke.
Definitely.
So I'm not sure what happened against VT. Maybe VT's better than we all thought. But
well, not better than I thought. But, didn't you pick VT to win the ACC?
I picked Florida State mistakenly.
Oh, somebody else picked VT with me.
I think I may have.
One of the you probably did too. One of the football guys did, because I know when we ran the graphic in the paper.
Okay.
So it may have been could have been McCall or Bobby. I don't know. It probably wasn't Phil. Phil's always wrong. So
I hope you didn't talk me into picking FSU in the ACC.
Ooh.
Oh man, that would have been.
I did pick FSU VT in the championship game though, so I did think FSU was going to be good. You're not the only one who thought.
The Seminoles are just woeful. Like I don't even know what to say about them. Like they've got to the point where like kind of hanging on to like almost BC's like some kind of moral victory. Like
how did
they're
no?
A shell...
It's not.
No, but
that was a disaster. Like the coverage was awful. Like everybody's saying this is it for FSU. Like Bobby.
They're a shell of what they used to be. I thought this year was really going to be the year. Even after the loss to Miami, I thought they showed a lot, and that were like they were going to be pretty good in the conference.
And they beat the crap out of BYU on the road. How did that happen?
I have no idea. And looking back, like because they lost to BC, but like they look bad in every way. You have to be disappointed.
Is this a Bowden thing? I mean, people are starting to call for Bowden now.
People are painting it as a Bowden thing at the very least.
Here's the thing. Bowden's like he's a neutral effect on the team. Like he doesn't do anything for the team. I don't think he like hurts the team. I don't think
he's just
there working negatively against it, but he's not like he's not a head coach. He doesn't do anything that a head coach does at any other school. I didn't see the clip after the Jacksonville State game. Did he call them Troy?
What?
This is what I heard.
I'm sure this is possible.
We need to go look at it. I heard that after the Jacksonville State game in the press conference, he called them Troy, and possibly multiple times. Jacksonville State. It was like Troy, and they just kept moving, or possibly did it more than once.
Ooh, boy, he's seen better days.
I like Bobby Bowden a lot, even though I grew up a Miami fan, so I just didn't like FSU. Coming to Florida, I didn't like, you know, gain any more love for FSU. But I've always liked him. I think he's like he's a good coach. He built the program from nothing. He seems always very like personable when the media talks to him. He's not afraid to speak his mind a little bit. So it's unfortunate, but yeah, it's got to be time for him to move on. He's just not doing anything to help them at this point.
I think you have to respect him, you know, for all the reasons you mentioned, but he's not adding anything.
Right.
The only thing he's doing is taking away from some of the authority Jimbo Fisher could have as the coach, you know, the coach in waiting, quote unquote, that he is now. You know, and if he were allowed to do everything his way, bring in his own people, get Mickey Andrews out of there for however many, after 20 whatever years that he's been there, I think he could have a little bit more rule, and that might start to change things around. But just getting Bobby out of there right now, that's not going to do anything.
Something I want your take on, though, is this exact situation presented itself at Penn State like 3 or 4 years ago, or maybe 5 years ago. I think maybe I was still in high school, but like people were calling for Paterno to like get out of there because Penn State hadn't been good for a couple of years. It was looking bad. Paterno's getting old, and then all of a sudden, Penn State's like good again. Like Paterno somehow got them like turned around again. So can that happen at FSU? Right. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think this is kind of sad to say, but I think Joe Paterno is much more with it than Bobby Bowden when it comes to his like what he's doing for that team. I think Paterno is much more involved in the actual coaching of his team than Bowden is. And I think he still has it together. And it's not just because they're winning. I think he's just a little bit sharper at this point in their careers. So I think he was able to turn around. And I think Bobby at this point is just kind of that ship sailed. He's just hanging on.
I agree. I think Bobby's a figurehead at this point. So he's not adding or taking away anything football-wise, where Paterno was at least still involved in the day-to-day coaching and planning and everything. Because I feel like Bobby is literally just a figurehead.
All right, well, through the magic of the iPhone, we have discovered that Bobby Bowden did, in fact, refer to Jacksonville University as Troy several times in his post-game press conference.
Unbelievable.
So, take that for what you will.
How can that happen? Could you imagine covering a game and Urban Meyer coming into the post-game calling Charleston Southern, like, some other school.
Grambling State.
Yeah, like, you know, I don't know. I can't think of a school off the top of my head. Like, William & Mary played great today. Like, whoever, whatever random little school he, like, chose to associate them with.
The question is, did the beat reporters correct him? Or they just, like, is it Bobby's? You just let him go? Like, he's just going to be Bobby?
He's just going to be Bobby, man. What can you do?
I don't know, man.
And it's not out of disrespect. I think he just doesn't know, like, right?
I think he's so out of it.
That's
that he
the thing. How do you not know, though?
Bobby Bowden has played so many games.
Troy's a step up from Jacksonville State. They should be proud to be mentioned the same sentence as Troy.
It's true. I think he's literally just so out of it. He's
maybe he had a flashback because Troy also played them dangerously close at home a couple years ago. He was just,
it all runs together now.
Yeah. Or maybe he's above all our heads and he's just like, it's all a big joke to him. He's playing out saying the exact same things he said after that Troy game.
All right. And then the other thing I want to talk about with this, get your guys' take on. If you're the FSU administration, though, can you make that change? That change you can make?
I think he has to. I think Bobby has to make the decision in the end, right?
I would have said no a year or two ago, but I think if you keep losing, you don't get a, you lose the choice. Yeah, like, if they start losing, like, lose two or three more games in a row here, well, like, you have to.
This literally isn't just, like, a bad start. This is, like, the worst start in a long time for FSU.
And it's a string of, like, not-so-great seasons, too. It's all culminating
like
here.
Like, 7 or 8 years of just not being good.
I mean, they can't fire him. They would have to try to talk sense into him. Like, they'd have to sit him down and just be like, look, we can't fire you. You know we can't fire you. I know we can't fire you. But you need to move out gracefully here because things are getting bad and we need to move on.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, it's tough for them. I don't think they should fire him because just what, you know, guys like Bowden and Paterno have done for a program, like, you can't fire those guys.
Yeah. And there's no way he'll step down. I don't think there's any.
Really?
There's no chance he steps down.
Well, how do you get rid of him then?
You just have to wait out the season and he won't come back. But I think there's any way. He'll want to finish out the season.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know. Yeah. You're talking about making a mid-season switch?
I thought that's what you meant.
No, there's no way a mid-season switch gets made, ever.
Okay.
I
thought you meant.
No, I'm talking about at the end of the year.
Oh, I could definitely see it, like, I'm just going to retire now.
Okay.
It's time, like, that
kind of
thing.
Well, that's how he should go out. You should replace him in the middle of the season.
I thought that's what you meant. That's
embarrassing.
I thought that was ridiculous.
Yeah, you replace, like, a legend like that. Like, all right, thanks. You can step down now. We'll shuffle you into an administrative role.
Yeah. I'll be, like, the associate AD.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, there's no way that they do that. And he definitely doesn't deserve that either.
Let's move on nationally. Talk about two more teams. I believe we talked about in the beginning of the season podcast. Sort of controversial among us.
Very controversial
among us. Notre Dame and Michigan. What do we think of them this year? They're both 4-1. Both been, you know, fairly impressive. The offense at Notre Dame is great.
Surprisingly good. And as much as it pains me to say Notre Dame's good at all, they are. Their offense is great. Jimmy Clausen's played exceptionally well.
I mean, I thought they would both end up about, like, as 8-4 teams, and I think that's still in play for both of them. They're both 4-1 right here. Notre Dame has a great offense. They really do. I'm not going to say their offense isn't good, but they have seemingly no defense whatsoever, and they've had to pull miracles, like, 3 weeks in a row now to get out with all those wins. So I don't want to take anything away from them. They won the games, but they're going to lose to USC after their bye week this week. I think after that they get Boston College, we said, which is another game they could possibly lose. And then they play a bunch of teams at the end of their schedule, the tail end, where they're not great teams. I think it's Navy, Pitt, UConn, and Stanford, where I could see them losing to any one of those teams or possibly going 2-2, depending on how things go. But Michigan's been even more surprising to me just because I didn't know Tate Forcier was going to be this good, obviously. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone did because he's just a freshman. But he's really looked good for them, and I still think they'll end up around that 8-4 mark. But they've looked better than I thought.
I think Michigan will be 8-4. They could finish worse. They play three ranked teams. They're Iowa, Penn State, and Ohio State at the end of the year, I think one of which is on the road. I think they drop all three of those, and they could lose a surprising game and finish, you know, 7-5 or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Well, I tend to think that Michigan's a better team, although they might not end up with a better record than Notre Dame. I think they've got more playmakers. They're more talent on the field, more speed. I think that program's definitely moving in the right direction. I think people, you know, Rich Rodriguez had a really hard time last year, so, but I think he's proven that his system is going to work in the Big Ten, and it's definitely going to work at Michigan. So I think in the next year or two, you're going to see Michigan become a perennial, like, top 10 team again.
Yeah, that's fine. I never said that the Michigan was going to be out, you know, for good or whatever. I just, this year, talks of either of those teams getting to a BCS bowl this year, I think, was a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, Notre Dame can always kind of weasel their way in the back door, so, like, sometimes they get in when they don't deserve it. But I just still think it was way too premature. I know there was talk about Notre Dame was, like, could be a top five team. They could be in the national championship, according to some national analyst, Lou Holtz.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, all that kind of talk was just ridiculous. Or, like, if they don't make it to a BCS game, they should fire Charlie Weiss. Like, how is that the measuring stick there right now?
I mean, don't put anything past Notre Dame. You're right. They certainly can weasel their way in. They've done it before.
And they certainly could fire Charlie Weiss if things go wrong. They shouldn't. There's no reason to. I mean, but nationally, like, if they're getting heat, they'll do whatever they have.
If they have two losses, they lose to USC, right? So let's say they win the rest of their games. That means they'll have two losses. They'll have lost to USC and Michigan and beaten no one. BC would have been their best win at that point, or Stanford, or who knows what. Like, could they possibly get in a BCS game?
I think they do get in the BCS.
You think they do?
I think two losses they do.
Even though they've beaten
And I think it's at the expense of a team like maybe like a TCU who probably deserves it, or a Utah.
That'd be terrible.
That'd be so brutal.
That would just be like everything bad we already know about the system coming to life.
Although this is kind of contingent on the fact of where Boise State ends up, because I think Boise State maybe is in the title game if they win out.
Really? I hope so. I'm rooting for it.
Yeah,
but
both me and Kyle have a huge rooting interest in the Boise State team making it to the title
game. I love everything about Boise State.
I think the only way we're getting it is if every other Pac-10, every other Big 12 and, Pac-10 school has to have two losses, dude.
You think two losses? I think if Oklahoma beats Texas and Texas is no longer undefeated, I think if there's all one-loss teams and, like, an undefeated SEC team, I think they get it. Why shouldn't they get it?
A one-loss Texas is going to get it.
Yeah.
Over a one-loss Big 12 champion Texas, I think, is definitely going to get it over a, whatchamacallit?
Yeah,
undefeated Boise.
Undefeated Boise. But what could happen, okay, now this is interesting. What if Oklahoma beats Texas and runs the table in the conference, they're still going to go to the conference championship game over Texas because both of their losses are out-of-conference losses right now.
So then you
have a situation where Oklahoma wins the Big 12 with two losses. They're not going to go with two losses. And then you have Texas with one loss, but they didn't win their own conference. I have a big problem putting a team that doesn't win their own conference in the national championship game.
Although there might be some backlash because, like, the same thing happened in Texas last year, kind of, where they kind of got, like, overlooked. Even, you know, they didn't get a chance to play for it last year.
Win your conference. Yeah. I mean, I know last year was a weird scenario.
I agree, and I'm all for Boise getting in. I'd be upset if Boise was undefeated and didn't get at least get a shot.
But what about, like, a one-loss, like, USC or Oregon? I think they probably – oh, Oregon. They can't put Oregon in over Boise, right?
No, absolutely not.
That'd be a travesty.
No, that won't happen.
So
USC, I think, is the one.
A one-loss USC would do it. They probably go to a one-loss Big Ten school, as much as I would hate to see Ohio State get killed as usual, but it could happen.
Don't you think that at this point, though, Boise State's built up a little bit more credibility where they're not necessarily like the underdog team they used to be? They're like a Gonzaga-type program for college football. Like, if they're undefeated, they should get the chance, right?
I think we've reached the point, like, you know, since the last couple of years, that it's time for, if, you know, an undefeated smaller school gets it, they should just be thrown in there just to see what happens, just for the experiment of it.
I mean, if there's no other clear-cut team that should be in there, I think you should give it to him. I do think a one-loss conference champion Texas deserves it, though. I would give it to him probably, but I can't put him in over like in these other situations. I definitely put him in over a Big Ten school because the Big Ten just blows.
I think I would put a one-loss USC in ahead of him, though. As much as that pains me, I think I'd do it ahead of Boise State.
Yeah, you might have to.
No,
but the Pac-10 doesn't even have a conference championship
in
game.
Pasadena.
Give him the home
unbelievable
game.
It's hard to compare like a Boise and like a one loss USC, but if we're gonna use like maybe Oregon as the measuring stick.
Well, hopefully Oregon beats USC and then that'll fix a lot of things.
But I mean, Boise proved they could beat good Pac-10 teams. So who's to say they couldn't beat
last few years they've proven they can beat good teams from anywhere. So I don't know. I think they've earned it.
I'm with that. I think maybe this is the time. You throw it out there just to see. I think we've got to that point.
What about an undefeated Boise State versus an undefeated Big East school? What if, like, Cincy runs the table?
Ooh. I think you go for Cincy or Big East school.
You have the BCS tie-in, although I would argue that Boise State's better than Cincinnati.
Right.
Yeah.
That'd be very interesting, actually, because I'm not sure. I think it would go to the Big East school because of the tie-in, and they're legitimate and whatnot.
Right. The ACC shouldn't be a factor in this because they're all the same team pretty much in the ACC, and they'll probably just beat each other.
Yeah.
So I think that'll just fix itself. Even VT, who I really like, I can't see them not suffering another loss at some point. So I think all the teams are like about the same in that conference, so it shouldn't be an issue. I think we'll probably be dealing with like the Big 12, I think, is probably the biggest obstacle here for a Boise State berth.
I definitely think you see a situation where Texas doesn't run the table. I think Oklahoma beats them. I think Bradford comes back next week and they beat Texas.
Triumphantly returns.
Triumphantly returns, and it just throws everything into chaos. Then I think it comes down to like a Florida or an Alabama versus a Pac-10 or a Boise or a Utah or something like that.
All right. Well, speaking of disaster, let's talk about this Heisman voting we did here at the paper. Recently, it's going to run in Tuesday's paper. Let's just talk some Heisman watch. Who are like the top candidates at this point? Let's start with Kyle because his ballot's not a joke.
You want my ballot?
I'm just throwing you under the bus, Deeper.
This is ridiculous.
You want my ballot, or do you want what like our composite ballot looks like?
Let's start with the composite ballot actually, and then you guys can hash it out.
I actually don't know for sure the composite ballot, but I could give you the top. Like Tebow got 22. We did everybody picked 5 people, and then it was a 5-4-3-2-1 point system. So Tebow got 22 out of a possible 25 votes, so he was our first place guy. Colt McCoy was in second. He had 13 votes. And then third and fourth was some combination of Tony Pike from Cincinnati and someone whose name is escaping me.
Harris?
No, you're the only person who voted for Harris
really?
At all.
That's surprising. It's very surprising.
It shouldn't be.
I want to say it was Clausen. I'm pretty sure Clausen was next highest up there. But, all right, my personal ballot, the way I had it going down, I had Tebow winning it. I had Kellen Moore, the Boise State quarterback, in second. I had Jimmy Clausen in third. I had Blaine Gabbert from Missouri, the quarterback from Missouri, in fourth. And then fifth, I went a little off the board here. I gave it to Eric Norwood, linebacker from South Carolina. He's got 6 sacks on the season, which is tied for 4th in the nation. He's got 2 interceptions, one he took back to the house, and is the leader of that team. And I just think he's been the best defensive player in the country so far, so I went with him.
I respect your decision to put in a defensive player on the list. I disagree with that. I think the rest of the ballots. I like Kellen
Moore. Okay. I know I was doing something controversial at 5, but that doesn't hurt anyone, unlike Deifer, who will just do something controversial at 3 or wherever necessary.
Deifer, what was your ballot?
All right. Well, I had McCoy at 1.
Of course, who is off my ballot.
Who was off your ballot?
9 passing touchdowns.
How do you justify this? I want to hear why Colt McCoy is number one, other than his name is Colt McCoy.
Okay, well, that is part of it. It's who you think are the best players in college football are, and his numbers aren't great at this point, but I think he's in the running. I think he has to be in the running.
Well, yeah, he's in the running, but I think it's like a down-the-line thing. What I wanted to see from it right now was like a who is the top 5 right now.
Yeah, we're not projecting.
It's a power poll. Yeah, not a projection, essentially. So while I agree that McCoy will absolutely be on there later on, he'll probably finish 2nd after, you know, the Oklahoma game and he just goes
right,
nuts.
Right, teams are going to lose. Like, Missouri will probably tank at some point and Gabbert will be out of it or, you know, that things will correct itself down the line. But to this point in the season, Colt McCoy has 9 touchdown passes and 5 interceptions.
All right, well, the rest of my ballot.
Good enough for first place, all right, apparently.
Tebow, I had 2nd. 3rd, I had Jacory Harris. Now,
unbelievable.
Jacory Harris has won some huge games. I think he's very much responsible for a lot of those wins. He didn't play early in some of those games, but he came through in the end of all. He made some huge throws. Against Florida State, the first game of the season, he had an unbelievable game, especially down the stretch. He won that game for them.
I really like Jacory Harris, so I'm upset that I'm going to have to argue against him, but he has 8 touchdowns and 5 interceptions.
Is it all numbers?
Or 4 interceptions?
Is it all numbers, though?
Yes, pretty much.
Like, because there's a bunch of good teams right now. You're saying, like, you're pretty much giving it to Harris just because Miami's good. His stats aren't exceptional. And he's not winning.
I think it's not just about the stats. I think he's turning that. He's the leader of that team, and he's helping turn that program back around.
I don't take any of that into account, I feel like. I give you points if your team's winning, obviously, because you get points for being the reason that your team's winning. But Miami's not undefeated. They have a loss, where a lot of these schools are undefeated. Boise State's undefeated. Missouri's undefeated to this point. I can't put them in front of guys like that.
All right. At 4,
this is the worst.
Okay, at 4, and I admittedly screwed up on this one.
Right,
I had Javon Best at 4, and
Javon Best, I don't know.
I did not watch him play this week. I thought his numbers were better than they were, and that was a mistake. I would probably put Kellen Moore from Boise State.
Good man.
Well, I won't come down on you.
And then at 5, I have Tony Pike, who I think is having a great year. Cincinnati's undefeated.
I mean, at 5, you could pretty much do what you want, so I'm not upset with you. You had, like, Pike at. Like, at five, you can just pretty much, there's a lot of guys who are in that running. There's a lot of guys from, you know, the Alligator that had Tony Pike, like, way up the list. Like, yeah. Obviously, he was, like, third or fourth place finisher on our total. And I think that's absurd because Cincinnati, to me, is no better or playing harder competition than Boise or Missouri to this point in the season. And he has worse stats than Kellen Moore and Blaine Gabbert. So I don't understand why people put him so high.
Where is he statistically with Jimmy Clausen?
Clausen's statistically the best in the nation.
Really?
He has the highest quarterback rating in the nation. His like touchdown to interception ratio is not. There's some guys who haven't thrown a pick yet, but he's at like 12 or 13 to 1. Mm. He's been incredible. Clausen, I think, statistically has been the best. So. Mm.
My dislike for Jimmy Clausen is so strong that I couldn't justify putting him on my ballot. Although, or clearly my balloting's a joke or whatever. But
he admits it. You're letting your personal bias get in the way here of you.
Sure. Yeah.
All right, Adam, you didn't have to make a ballot for this because you don't cover football. But if you did, what would your five be?
I was hoping to not get this question. I have not thought this through at all. I would put this is going to be a disaster. I'll just go ahead and say this might be worse than Defer. I'll apologize.
Nothing's worse than Defer.
I'd put
guys. I thought about enough of this.
Defer's going to leave soon.
He's going to walk out.
Jeez. I'd put Tebow, I guess, up top. I don't think you can really argue against that just because his team's doing so well.
And he's been good. He's good stats.
I will not put McCoy up there. I'm looking at the Alligator list right now. I'd put... I might put Clausen second.
That's cool.
I hate that they have a loss, and I wouldn't. I'd do that. Kellen Moore, actually, I put Kellen Moore second, Clausen third. I'll put Pike fourth, and
Eric Norwood.
If I wanted to put a defensive player, I'd put Eric Berry. I'll just say that.
Okay.
So,
yeah. I think because of the loss, you can't put McCoy behind Clausen.
No, but okay, Clausen's done way more to help his team win than McCoy has. Sure, Texas has won, like, in spite of Colt McCoy, or not in spite of him, that's a strong
word. He's not hurting him, he's definitely
not helping. Clausen is helping his team win. When they lost, it was because of their defense, not because of Clausen. Clausen's been playing out of his mind so far.
If you're having a dominant statistical season, look at Tebow in 07. Like, the team was not good, and he won the Heisman because, you know, just...
I mean, they weren't a joke, but they were 9-3, and he won the Heisman. That was good enough for Heisman.
Yeah, not good in the national scene.
Fair enough.
Also, I really resent when Troy Smith won it. He absolutely shouldn't have. He had, like, not horrible stats, but, like, just shouldn't have won it. He only won because Ohio State was undefeated that year. And I hate that the Heisman Trophy turns into that by the end of the season.
All right, before we give out our Reggies and Kyles here, let's revisit the Gator guarantees.
Just two other guys I want to mention, three other guys, I guess, at wide receiver. A.J. Green's kind of the big name. But for my money, I like Eric Decker at Minnesota. He makes big play after big play. I think he leads the nation in receiving yards right now. And Marty Gilliard? Okay, Marty Gilliard at Cincinnati, who is also a beast right now. He's got like 7 touchdowns already, and is just doing great for them. So. Yeah.
Not Golden Tate after his 9-catch, 244-yard, 2-touchdown performance.
If there was a 1-game Heisman, he would get it. But.
He now has, what was it, he had 2 more receiving yards in that game than Florida's leading receiver does all season. Yep. That's an unbelievable statistic.
And has there ever been a more fitting name for a player at Notre Dame than Golden Tate?
No, absolutely not.
It's McCoy-esque.
It is. It's better. True. It's more fitting.
Yeah. All right.
I don't know if it's more fitting. Colt McCoy.
Golden?
Colt McCoy?
What is it?
You guys literally just said
Colt
their
McCoy
names.
Colt McCoy is Texas.
All right, let's move
it's
on.
It's a character.
Golden Domers? You draw that up.
Anyway.
Let's move on.
Please.
Let's talk about the Gator guarantees we made Friday. Kyle, you said that the Florida volleyball team would take down Kentucky 3-0, I believe.
3-0, I said.
You were there with me Friday night. That did not happen so much.
I'm really on a roll with these Gator guarantees, right. And not in a good way.
Let's phrase this. I said Florida would win 3-2. I thought that was a very safe prediction. I was wrong. You were more wrong.
I was the most wrong.
And what was my favorite most wrong prediction? We're going to talk about people being wrong in predictions. Ben Volen from the Palm Beach Post on this show said, you know, it's an odd number week for FSU. They'd come out and beat BC by, I don't know, 4 touchdowns. No, it did not happen.
Based on being an odd number week.
If you listen to the last podcast, you know that Ben is the worst college football pick'em guy of all time. He was 8-31 heading into last week. Now, I want all the listeners to know, this was our best week as a group ever. So many people had great scores. Defer went 6-4, which a lot of times will win the week, and he's probably in like 6th, 7th place this week. Phil went 9-1. I went 8-2. There were a couple 7-3s. It was just, it was a complete, it was awesome. Everybody's doing great. And Ben still goes 3-7. So that's how bad Ben is at this.
More importantly, am I no longer in first place now?
No, you're still in first.
Thank God.
Your lead's being encroached upon, but you're still in first.
Yeah, still on top.
It kept me up all weekend. I was worried.
And then the other prediction we talked about before, Ed said that Tebow would be there Monday morning for his press conference. He was not. Clean sweep, 0-4. Good job, guys. Our guarantees.
Everyone loses.
All right, let's move on. Give out our weekly awards, the Reggie Nelson Award for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week, in which we recognize one good thing and one bad thing we saw in the week of sports, or I guess just in life, as we'll be doing today. I'm going to give my Reggie to the Kentucky volleyball team. Came into the O'Connell Center and beat Florida for the first regular season loss at home for the Gators since 2004. Unbelievable performance. They're really well coached. Great program there, Kentucky. And they're finally finally establishing another relevant SEC volleyball program, somebody to challenge Florida, make them a little bit better. I think it's going to pay off for everybody in the long run.
Agreed. My Reggie Nelson is going to go to the SEC West. I can't be any more impressed with the SEC West. They've done a great job. Auburn in particular is really, really helping that case for me. Good job, everyone on that side. I can't be more impressed with them.
All right, well, I went to Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights this weekend back in Orlando.
Always story time.
And I'm not sure if you guys have ever been, but you wait in line for these haunted houses for, like, hours on end. It's horrible. Unless your roommate's girlfriend's dad has some kind of crazy executive gold card that allows you to bypass any and all lines and walk to the front of every line you want to get to, which we did. Now, you flash this card, and people just, like, bow before it. You get, VIP valet parking. People just, like, they start calling in on the radio, like, oh, there's an executive gold card. Oh, code red. They escort you past all these, like, the people slumming it in line.
Yeah, all the peons.
Yeah, to the front. You get right on. We went on every ride. It was unbelievable. So, Valerie, thank you.
It's the little things in life that gets deeper by. All right. I'm going to give my Kyle to myself. If you're a longtime listener of this show from last week, you remember that I gave a preemptive Kyle Jackson to last week before the week had even started for a multitude of reasons. I was feeling sick. Turns out, got over that in less than a day. I was feeling good that afternoon. I said that week of classes was gonna suck. We had no less than 3 classes canceled, a paper pushed back, and the test didn't go as bad as I thought it did. The football bye week was actually good for me. I got stuff done. I couldn't have been more wrong, so I'm going to give it to myself.
Wow.
The reverse jinx works every time.
The reverse jinx worked great, I got to say.
I'm not going to give my Kyle a D for, as previously promised. You dodged a bullet here. I'm giving it to Cal, because every year Cal's highly ranked coming in, and every year I say, well, don't ever count on Cal. They're always highly ranked. It means nothing. But they tricked me. They tricked me into thinking this year might be different. And then they put up 6 points in the last 2 weeks against USC and Oregon, probably the two other best teams, or the two best teams, period, in that conference. So, Cal, you get a Kyle Jackson. You're now in the category with Clemson, which is no matter how much preseason hype you get, don't ever think they're actually going to be good.
Nice.
All right, well, I'm giving my Kyle to my mother this weekend. But
I'm giving it to myself? You're giving it to your mother? This is terrible.
My mother bought my girlfriend a Snuggie. Now, I'm not sure if you guys know what a Snuggie is, but it's a blanket with arms. It's the stupidest thing that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I can't justify how these things actually sell. They're everywhere, by the way.
Great marketing.
Now, if it's not called the Snuggie, this has, like, no marketability at all. It's because they're selling the name Snuggie for whatever reason.
You know
people, like, girls melt. It's whatever.
Because it's a blanket. Like, put a blanket on yourself.
Yeah, well, this Snuggie is pink, and I hate it. So the Snuggie, no good. Kyle.
All right, that wraps it up for this show. Check back later in the week. We'll do Gators in the NFL. We'll preview the big LSU game. Bunch of other stuff, all random nonsense. Check back probably Thursday or Friday. And thanks for listening.